Well, if I didn't have to say it already, Happy New Year to us all. We survived the holidays, and now it's 2020. It is upon us, and already it seems like this year is like anxiety on steroids. But before that, Josh, thank you very much for leading the service today, and thank you for your music, and just thank you for everybody showing up today. And it does seem like an anxious time has continued even with the change of years. The danger of war in the Middle East is even higher than before. The tumultuous politics and, of course, the election coming up later this year are intense in this country. Wildfires in the Amazon and in Australia. Melting glaciers. There's a lot to fret about. We are not living, as we know, in an easy time. But never fear. There are always our New Year's resolutions to carry us through the year, or at least for the next couple of weeks. Now, I went online yesterday, and of course, already there was a top 2020 New Year's resolutions published a couple of days ago based on an American survey of 287,000 people. I'm going to read the top New Year's resolutions from number 10 to number 1. Number 10, stay motivated. Number 9, upgrade my technology. Number 8, be a better person. Number 7, be more healthy. Number 6, be happier and better mental health. Number 5, go to the gym. Number 4, lose weight and diet. Number 3, eat more of my favorite foods. Number 2, trying something new. And number 1, actually doing my New Year's resolutions. And there you have it. The number one resolution is the most important, because generally our resolutions, I don't speak for you, but I can speak for me and others, last maybe a month. The stresses of life intercede, motivation gives way to comfort food and binge watching Netflix programs. And by the time we remember our resolutions to follow them and affirm them, it's already April, and then taxes are due. Now, I should add here that when I was in West Seattle in 2016, 17, 18, we had the election. You remember the election of 2016? You probably remember that, right? Well, the New Year's resolutions that I heard after the election were heavy drinking, comfort food as much as possible, and turning off TV, computer, radio, smartphones for the entire year. Didn't work out very well, but at least it was probably more honest than some of the resolutions that we make. So this morning, what I'd like to do is talk about a different kind of resolution. And we call them vows. And vows, according to Dr. Bays, are directed toward the future and they're aspirational. At their best, they keep us from wandering too far off the path with our best intentions and commitments. And yes, our lives get a little wobbly at times. But if we are able to restate and commit to our vows, they're not just resolutions that start on January 1st. They're ongoing. They change. They evolve. They are called life vows. So I'd like to first say a few things about oaths, since they are a type of a vow. I'm going to talk about oath, and then what a vow is, and then I'm going to give you, and this gets back to the Buddhist thing, an example based upon my own life experience of what a life vow means. And then we're going to have a meditation time. Okay, oath. What's the difference between an oath and a vow? Well, an oath, according to everything I've said, and by the way, an oath doesn't mean an obscenity, although we can see it that way. An oath is a publicly stated promise. Wikipedia, which is actually one of the best ways to look online for facts, say this about an oath. It is either a statement of fact or a promise with wording relating to something sacred. A common legal substitute for those who conscientiously object to making sacred oaths, like, so help me God, is to give an affirmation instead. So here are some examples of oaths. Here's one that you probably have heard before. It's the oath of office for the President of the United States. It goes as follows. I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Members of Congress have a similar oath of office with some added words. I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States, not a person, but the Constitution, against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I'm about to enter. And then usually there's an optional sentence, so help me God. So that's Congress. If you've ever been court, sworn testimony in court starts with an oath. If any of you were in the Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts, there is, as I understand it, an oath that you take when you enter that organization. Similarly, when you enter the military and other organizations, there is an oath which you state, and you state it in public. A vow, on the other hand, is a promise for the future. Let's stop for a moment and just think about what a vow might mean to you. The most common ones that we hear about or say or do are marriage vows. They are shared promises of being in relationship, ideally for the rest of our lives, till death do us part. Traditional religious communities and ceremonies had the priest or the minister read the vows and ask each person of the couple, do you agree with them? And they're supposed to say, I do. If they say, I don't, and this happened once to me, then we have a serious problem we have to address. But ideally, the couple will affirm whatever the priest or minister has said and say, I do, and we move forward. Now, nowadays, and I've done quite a few services with this, is that the couple write up their own vows, and they say them to each other, and then there is a ring ceremony or some ceremony of giving objects to affirm the vows. The other common vows that we might take in our lives are religious vows. Confirmation in various Christian traditions is one example. Now, I'll say, since I was never Christian, I never took confirmation, so I have no idea what it's like. So I had to look online, and I imagine there are many different varieties of confirmation of entering as a set of vows into a religious community. Reform Judaism has a form of confirmation. Interestingly enough, Islam does not. But the vows are similar to marriage vows in that we commit to make them part of our relationships with ourselves and others for the rest of our lives. Again, that's why they are called life vows. So I'm going to give you now my personal example of what a life vow might be. And I'm going to do a total aside here, noting that we're running early, not late. That means we may end early and then can rush over to the other side to the parish house and grab food before the children get there. So this is a good thing. Here's what a life vow is about from the Zen Buddhist tradition. I lived at a Buddhist monastery for about a year in Oregon in the late 1990s. I then had to go back to Portland, Oregon, where I was living, in order to get a job and pay bills. And I was still in a very sustained practice on what does the Dharma, the teachings, really mean in day-to-day life. Now, I'm going to correct one misunderstanding here. People do not become Buddhist. Rather, we affirm a system of moral and aspirational standards to follow. In Buddhist teachings, these are called the precepts. In the Zen tradition, we take what are called the 16 Bodhisattva precepts in a ceremony called Jukai, J-U-K-A-I. And I mentioned a few weeks ago about the Bodhisattva vows. And a Bodhisattva is a person who could become totally enlightened, awakened, aware, but chooses not to in order to help others become aware and awake themselves. The preparation to take this ceremony takes months. We have classes, discernment, discussions with our teachers, and also as part of that in the Zen tradition, sewing a garment called a roksu. It's R-O-T-K-S-U. And sewing that garment is the hardest part of all the preparations. I'm curious, how many people here sew? You don't? Oh, well. Well, I don't either. And that was part of the problem. So what we do is we have to, from scratch, and it means looking at guidelines, or this is how you make a roksu, that are 1,100 years old, and so help me, they have never been changed, and they're totally illegible. So we have to figure it out as we go. So this is what a roksu is. It is a miniature version of the Buddha's robes. And it goes back into probably about 1,500 years when in Japan and in China, Buddhists were sometimes persecuted and could not wear their robes for fear of violence or death. And so these roksus were created to wear under clothing so that you were still wearing your robes, but they were invisible. Now, this little sucker took 6 months to sew. We are not supposed to do very much in the way of using a machine. We are supposed to do as much as we can by hand. And anyone can come up and look at this later. They're all little pieces of fabric which we have to cut out, again, by hand, and then sew together, and it is a nightmare. And what happens is when we have the ceremony, excuse me, our teacher puts us on for us, and in the back, our teacher has written words, and in this case, it was, vast as a robe of liberation, a formless field of benefaction, I wear the Buddha's teaching, saving all sentient beings. And saving later got changed to freeing. Given to me, and my Buddhist or Dharma name is Jimyo, which means light bearer. This was on January 7th, 1999. Now, there were three of us who took that ceremony. We all had to take the classes, we had to talk to our teachers, we had to be in discernment, and the worst case was we had to sew. Three guys. None of us knew how to sew. We were supposed to recite the precepts together and to be in silence. We met at someone's house and we played rock music and we complained bitterly about how sewing wasn't for the faint of heart. We called ourselves the Zen Men's Sewing Circle. But finally the day came, and the three of us repeated what our Zen teacher said to us line by line. We would repeat the line. I'm going to read all the precepts, as well as taking refuge. And taking refuge means essentially committing ourselves to the teachings of the Buddha. And so each line, we had to repeat it and say, I do. I'm just going to repeat the lines. And this will give you a flavor of what a Jukai ceremony in Buddhism is. First, taking refuge. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma, the teachings. I take refuge in the Sangha, the community. Then the pre-pure precepts, three pure precepts. I vow not to commit evil. I vow to cultivate goodness. I vow to help others. And then what are called the 10 grave precepts. I vow not to kill, but to cherish all life. I vow not to steal, but to respect that which belongs to others. I vow not to misuse sexual energy, to be honest and respectful of others. I vow not to lie, but to speak the truth. I vow not to misuse drugs or alcohol, but to keep the mind clear. I vow not to gossip about others' faults, but to be understanding and sympathetic. I vow not to praise myself by criticizing others, but to overcome my own shortcomings. I vow not to withhold spiritual or material aid, but to give freely when needed. I vow not to unleash anger, but to seek its source within myself. And finally, I vow not to speak ill of the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, but to cherish and uphold them. And we repeated all of those, and the ceremony was over, and our Zen teacher put the garments on us, and we had affirmed and committed ourselves to the precepts for the rest of our lives. Now, these vows, like marriage vows, are aspirational. I struggled with alcohol for nearly 5 years after that ceremony. I still accidentally kill insects or other creatures, usually with my windshield in the spring. I will still occasionally liberate a pen from the church office without asking permission from Jody. That is still taking what is not mine. Ideally, whatever vows we take will last far longer than New Year's resolutions. That's why we don't take them lightly. For those of you who were or are married, do you still remember your vows? Do you follow them as best you can? I mentioned life vows earlier. What is mine? To be a lamp for those who have no light. That is why my Dharma name is Jimyo, Light Bearer. Have I realized my life vow? No. It's a work in progress. I don't get intoxicated with alcohol, but I sure can muddy my mind with too much attention to the news on social media. I can sometimes be way too honest, and it gets me in trouble. Every week, what I do, though, is I repeat all the precepts, and I do an atonement ritual so that I am renewed, I honor the failings or unskillfulness that I have had, and then I return to the new week. And that's why they're called training precepts. Living these vows is progress, not perfection, as we say in the 12-step traditions. So what I'd like to do is, I'd like to ask you to contemplate what your life vows might be. They could be marriage vows. They could be vows from when you were a child. Or you might not have any vows at all, and you're trying to figure out, how do I anchor my life in something solid that reminds me, this is what my life is about. So in the mornings, what I do on the mirror when I get up, and I go to the bathroom and there's a mirror and I'm washing my hands or whatever, and I'll see my vow is to become clear. My vow is to be a light for those who have no light. And I remind myself of that every single day. So what are your life vows? Think about it for a moment. And then I'm going to read the Dalai Lama's vows once again and see if maybe one of them might make sense. Now, consider that the vows that I read from the Dalai Lama don't mean you have to follow all of them. He's the Dalai Lama, he can do that. One, maybe two or more, may resonate with you and say, yes, that's what I aspire to be and do. So here they are again. May I become at all times, both now and forever, a protector for those without protection. A guide for those who have lost their way. A ship for those with oceans to cross. A bridge for those with rivers to cross. A sanctuary for those in danger. A lamp for those without light. A place of refuge for those who lack shelter. And a servant to all in need. So contemplate for a few moments if any of those vows resonate with you. Or do they resonate for us as a community? I'm particularly struck, a sanctuary for those in danger. We'll have silence for a short time before we sing.